Low Rider, War once again. We are joined here in studio by Kevin Zeese, co-host of Clearing the Fog radio program on We Act Radio at 1480 AM out of Washington, D.C. He's also put together, along with Margaret Flowers, Popular Resistance, incredible website you should all check out, and co-director of itsoureconomy.us. And Peter Ludlow joins us, professor of philosophy at Northwestern University, has written on hacktivism, the surveillance state, and the criminalization of dissent, the New York Times, The Nation, and other publications as well. Peter Ludlow and Kevin Zeese, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages and tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. So let's take a look at this. This case of Jeremy Hammond, who hacks into Strategic Forecasting, Inc., Strataforce is known, and reveals just how private industry is collaborating with
government
to spy on people across the world.
Yeah, no, I think what Jeremy Hammond is such an interesting character, and I look forward to hearing what your other guest has to say, because he's really looked at it pretty thoroughly. But, I mean, he sounds like a very young, bright guy who could do so much, and it's a shame that his talents aren't being used instead of being put away for 10 years. But releasing the Stratford documents was very important. I mean, it really showed the extent of spying on the Occupy movement, on citizens groups. We published an article about one of the things on popularresistance.org, we published an article about the strategy they used to divide political movements. It was one of the most viewed reports we put up. People really want to see how they're going after us, and they do. They have a strategy to go after us, you know, to divide and conquer, essentially. And it's quite amazing. I think some of his documents were used in the lawsuit against NDAA by Chris Hedges. They put those documents in to show that they really were at risk. So he did a remarkable thing, and I think he's also symbolic of a lot of frustration people have in this country with the inability of this government to respond to people's concerns, the frustration with the traditional tools of elections and lobbying, and looking for ways to actually have an impact and get this country going in the somewhat right direction. I've never seen a country, I can't remember our country going so many wrong directions at once and just not responding to people's interests. And so Hammond, I think, out of frustration, took the path he did. He tried other paths, but he really wanted to have an impact, and he has an impact. And I think he's really shown also with his courage a way for others to go forward.
Because he never shied down for a moment. Even
he has not shied. What an amazing closing statement he made, too.
We'll talk a bit about that. Now, Peter Ludlow, I mean, talk a bit about what actually happened here, because what he revealed from this private corporation, and he was hacking at the behest of an FBI informant, but we'll talk about that in a minute as well. But what he revealed weren't state secrets. What he revealed didn't affect American security. So talk about what happened here, and what was the reasoning for giving him 10 years and putting him on trial in the first place?
Right.
Here's a big question.
He's just one case among many where the government is coming down really, really hard on a particular kind of hacker. I think the government doesn't really care if you hack to enrich yourself. So we lionize people like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, who basically began their careers by committing computer crime. In the case of Jobs and Wozniak, they began by defrauding the phone company, and we think, oh, wow, isn't that cute? But if someone like Jeremy Hammond comes along, who's an old-school Chicago boots-on-the-ground activist, and starts hacking for us and starts exposing the strategies that the 1% uses to acquire and assert its power, that's when they really freak out, and that's when they really drop the hammer on these people. And I do think that's the reason the government completely freaked out about this particular case and several other cases that are still active.
What was it about what Jeremy Hammond revealed to WikiLeaks and other journalists around the world that got under the skin, so to speak, of the government? Because it really wasn't, as I said, what he revealed wasn't kind of threatening. It was obviously exposing.
But it's not hurting the U.S. government. It's embarrassing, which
right,
is worse.
Right, exactly.
Right?
So
let me just give you one. I mean, there's so much there.
And there's so much there.
Let's face it, there are 5 million emails, and we've just seen the tip of the iceberg. And let me just give you one example that I think sums it up perfectly, which is when the Coca-Cola company was concerned about the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, and they came to Stratford, said, what do you have on PETA? And their VP for research said, well, let's see, the FBI has a classified file on PETA. I'll see if I can get that for you. Okay. Now, so let's think about everything that's wrong with that, right?
God.
Just that two sentences, that there's so much wrong. First of all, why is Coca-Cola employing a private security company to look into PETA? Second, why does the FBI have a classified file on PETA? Third, why does this guy think he has access to it? And I think that third part is the scariest, because what it reveals is that at the kind of higher levels of these private security companies, you get a revolving door, which is a lot of these people have rotated out of the CIA, the FBI, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They retain their classified security clearances. And in effect, they are now little CIAs that are operating without any oversight whatsoever.
It's crazy, isn't it? I mean, what we're saying about Jeremy, you could say the same about Chelsea Manning. You could say the same about Ed Snowden. None of these folks did anything for profit. They blew the whistle because they saw problems. They saw illegality. They saw things that the public should know about. And the Stratford leak, I think, really shows just the fact that Stratford has 5 million emails and that so much of it's tied with corporate and government security working together. Just that fact scares the government. They don't want public to know.
But you said just that fact scares the government, Kevin, but just that fact scares the hell out of me.
Well, it should. Well, it scares the government. It should. That's the point of releasing it. But it scares the government because now people know that they're working that closely.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Peter.
Well, let's just follow up on that a second, because I think, there is a very plausible analysis of this situation which says that someone in the FBI intentionally let Jeremy get this information and leak it precisely because someone in the FBI, or maybe many people in the FBI, were concerned about Stratford, but they were powerless to do anything about it.
Yes.
Because, as you said in the intro, he was sort of pointed towards Stratford by an FBI informant. And second, the FBI purchased the servers on which the content of those documents was downloaded. So the FBI knew about the hack from the very beginning.
That's right.
They provided the servers, and they had complete control over the contents of the hack. So it's not unreasonable to think that there are people in the FBI saying, we need to expose what's going on here, and we're going to use this kid to do it.
That's a very plausible scenario, and we know there are people inside the government who do not like the direction that intelligence gathering is going. They do not like the corporate relationships. It's people who are critical. Thomas Drake, there are people who are blowing whistles, so we know that they're there.
Right.
And so it's not an unplausible scenario at all that they let him do this hack in order to expose this
reality. So what you're saying, if they were, let's say for argument's sake, that what you were saying, Peter Ludlow, was correct, that the FBI was worried about this, some people in the FBI, about this increasing relationship between the corporate spy world and the government spy world. So that means what they did was just use Peter,
use Jeremy,
and hung him out to dry.
Exactly.
Oh, well, but actually, if you read the statement that Jeremy made at his trial, that's a big part of his statement, right? But not just in this case, but using him in order to hack foreign governments.
Yeah, that was also
and
a target.
And then, as you say, hang him out to dry, yeah.
So, and also the judge in this case.
Oh, God.
Who refused to recuse herself. What? How could that even be? That's insane.
It's amazing.
Explain that. I mean,
it is not even the, you don't even try to pretend you're a just court. I mean, here she is, a judge. Her husband works for a big law firm, and one of their clients is Stratford, and his email address is one of the things that gets leaked. They bring a motion to recuse, and she refuses. I mean, give me a break. And then she gives a maximum sentence. I mean, wow. I mean, not even the appearance of justice in this country. You know, all it does is spark more anger. This kind of case is going to get a lot of people who have these kind of skills and who are willing to take other actions to get more angry and more active. It's amazing how, since they went after Chelsea Manning as an effort to stop this kind of activity, look at all the leaks we've had since then. Hey, guys, the strategy of fear is not working. WikiLeaks is more accurate. Courage is contagious. And that's what seems to be happening more and more. And it's interesting about the courage is a contagious thing. You can use your fear to slap down 9 out of 10 people and scare them away from something. But 1 out of 10 comes out and with a leak. That does all the damage that's needed. So it's a really counterproductive approach. They'd be much smarter to take an open source transparency approach. That seems to work a lot better.
So, I mean, what does that say to you also, Peter, about the kind of future of hacktivism in this country?
Oh, well, yeah, I completely agree with that, which is that none of these efforts are really working to silence hacktivists. I mean, it might make them more cautious and more careful, but I don't think it's slowing them down at all. And I think we're also getting a new generation of reporters. And this is the really striking thing, you know, younger reporters influenced by some of the leaks that Glenn Greenwald has been able to get from people like Snowden, and they are very active, and they're really digging hard into, the history of Stratfor, for example. So I know a reporter that's picking up where Jeremy Hammond left off, in effect, saying, wow, this is really interesting. I need to know more. And in this case, you're going about getting that information through sort of traditional channels like seeking documents and so forth. But it's really a continuous enterprise. Digging, seeing what's behind the curtain, understanding, you know, what's kind of going on behind this veil of ignorance that's been sort of placed in front of us.
I mean, you think about it, Mark. I mean, you know, Greenwald was mentioned. You know, he's starting this new media project with a billionaire who's going to put $250 million into it. They've already developed a – in fact, it came from – what's his name? The kid who committed suicide. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. The hacktivist.
Aaron Schwartz.
Sorry, I'm blanking on his name.
Thank you.
But he he developed with some other folks a way to anonymously leak materials. And so Greenwald's going to have all his money and develop easier ways for people to be leaking anonymously with more protection. This is going to get bigger. And, you wouldn't have this billionaire – going to Greenwald if it wasn't for Manning and Snowden and all these things coming out. And so it's a kind of a cascading effect of a bigger and plus we're all seeing the corruption of government so deeply, you know, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Just last week, documents leaked about that, you know, showing that Obama's saying one thing and doing another. He's the biggest advocate for transnational corporate power in the world. Other countries that are also corporate are pushing back. He's going too far. I mean, so we're exposing these realities is just making people angrier and angrier, and you're going to see more and more people getting the truth out. This is not going to work for the government. They are losing fight here.
But I'm interested. Were you about to say something, Peter? I'm sorry.
I was just going to agree with that, yeah.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I'm really interested in this is to see some of the subtext here. And the subtext is, to me, I always find kind of interesting the contradictions of what the contradictions say about what's really going on here.
Mm-hmm.
When you clearly have, as we'll talk in the next part of this program, to Mel Goodman about the
militarism.
Militarism and intelligence. Are the contradictions inside of this in terms of you have parts of the FBI who are worried about Stratfor, maybe. This could be the scenario, to set Hammond up to do the work. On the other hand, you have this kind of revolving door, an interlocking network between certain intelligence officials in the government and this new growing power of intelligence people working for the corporate world.
Yeah.
And that's the part I think that is being exposed that is the most frightening in trying to figure out what's really going on. What is the divide inside of government over this? But even more importantly, what this means for the 21st century when corporations can spend their billions, well, some can spend their billions in backing Glenn, but others can spend their billions creating these organizations that kind of control what they want to control in the world through their intelligence. And that's what I really...
That's a very interesting question. And it's a very interesting conflict because I think we are in many ways, and this is just one intelligence gathering is just one example of this conflict that we're going through on a lot of issues between the people who are profiting from the status quo and the people who see the status quo as corrupt and want to change it. You're seeing it at the climate conference now with the climate conference funded by the oil companies and the car companies and the coal companies.
That's completely
insane.
Amy Goodman kind of exposed on
that. Yeah, you know, and then you have these kids who are protesting it, and they're being pushed out of the climate conference. So the corrupt people stay in, the people trying to expose it get pushed. It's a constant thing.
The climate conference sponsored by coal companies is just...
It's insane. I mean, it's just bizarre. I mean, and the UN defends it. I mean, you know, but so I see we're in this really interesting conflict time. I really see our side growing, the resistance side. You know, on popularresistance.org, we cover the resistance movement every day, and we see what's happening around the world. There are more and more people who are waking up and getting active, and I really think this kind of outrageous injustice against people like Jeremy Hammond, who is obviously a very bright young guy, is going to just spur that.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back. Dr. Peter Ludlow, I want you to jump into where Kevin just left off and picking up on this train of thought. Folks, you can join us live, 410-319-8888. Don't know if I told you we're live or not, but we are. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Blind eyes of justice. Deputy is the power. Dumb moves on money. Left us in a desperate hour.
We went out on that break, appropriately, with Dr. John's Revolution, and coming back here with Weather Report, Birdland. So, but we had to come out with a little Revolution by Dr. John, only appropriate. We're here with Kevin Zeese, co-host of Clearing the Fog, a radio program on We Act Radio, 1480 AM, Washington, D.C., co-director of itsoureconomy.us, and Popular Resistance is our other website, which is a pretty incredible website to read and check out. Dr. Peter Ludlow is with us. Dr. Peter Ludlow is professor of philosophy at Northwestern University. He has written on hacktivism, the surveillance state, and criminalization of dissent for the New York Times, The Nation, and many other publications. You can join us here, 410-319-8888. We are looking, talking about what happened to Jeremy Hammond, being sentenced to 10 years for hacking into Stratfor. And so, Peter, could you pick up where we left off just in terms of both the contradictions, but also what this means. I mean, this is to me, what's being exposed is a pretty frightening power structure being built.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to say, just as we left.
Go ahead, please.
You know, you began the, actually, before we came on, you began with reading all these significant dates in history.
Right.
And a couple months ago, a reporter called me from France, and he noted that the first leaks from Snowden came out on June 6th, which also happens to be D-Day.
Right.
And he said that, you know, the people in France, like some of his colleagues, reporters, were calling it like D-Day 2.0.
Wow.
And I think that's a good way to think about it, which is that, okay, so these things that we're seeing right now are kind of, you hit the beaches, and there are going to be a lot of hedgerows to fight through and so forth. But I think people are thinking in these terms. And I think more so outside the United States. So, for example, when I was in Brazil, all they wanted to do was talk about the NSA, and in that case also Canada, because Canada was spying on their oil company a little bit. But I think around the world, people are really waking up to this. I mean, we're waking up to it here in the U.S., but even more so once you get outside the U.S.,
And when you say waking up to it, it's more than just the intelligence conflict.
Right.
It's really this kind of global neoliberalism of corporate power. You know, we've been amazed on the TPP with people waking up to that. You know, 2 years ago, Margaret Flowers and I would go to a activist meeting and mention the TPP, and anyone heard of it? Like 4 out of 100 people have heard of it. Now it's like 70 to 80% are hearing of it, and people are getting active. So when people learn about this stuff, and that's what they're so afraid of, the Hammond types, because exposure really hurts them. They don't like to be exposed because what they're doing, they know is criminal. What they do, they know is wrong. They know it's corporate greed and a coup d'etat in all these issues, not just TPP. It's really a corporate coup d'etat with big government working with them.
Yeah,
and their exposure scares them.
Peter, go ahead.
Yeah, No, that's right.
Oh, you're
so
just saying
really
you had a
not criminalization of dissent in this case. It's
that's
actually
next
criminalization
point.
Of knowledge.
Right.
It's criminalization of knowledge. And that's why these people are dangerous, is because they're exposing what's going on behind the curtain.
Yep.
The criminalization of knowledge, which you just said, Peter Ludlow, let's explore this for a minute, because we're also what's going on here. Jeremy Hammond is one among many now who are being prosecuted, who are doing time in prison for any numerous acts, whether it's standing up in a corporate board meeting to try to do theater, saying I'm buying 10,000 shares when you're not really doing that, to expose them to this, and the jail sentences people are getting over this. This is unprecedented in the last 40, 50 years in America. Not unprecedented for some stuff that happened back in the 30s and even the 19th century, but it's unprecedented at this moment in terms of what's happening, how many people are being for dissent are being prosecuted.
By the president who promised the most transparent administration in history. It's happening now because we're at a critical moment. The corporate elite and the corrupt government that works with them is doing a power grab. And they're in the midst of a major power grab that they really want to tramp down on everyone's rights and ability to set their own course in life. And so it's a major, they're in a major moment. And the technology now allows information to get out, and it's going to get stronger, that technology. And so when that information gets out, it also comes out as a challenge to the corporate media, which has been mythologizing, providing myths every day that Americans are eating up. I every day I look at the newspaper or watch CNN, I see myths. And so when you get this kind of a leak by Hammond or Snowden or Manning or so many others, then they have all the citizens' media getting active, talking about it, writing about it, sharing it, and suddenly there's a whole network of people getting their information from somewhere other than the corporate media, and they're getting weaker. Their profits are going down. Their viewers are going down. Their credibility is going down. So this is a big conflict that affects many aspects, and I just hope people pick the right side and get active. We can defeat this. We're going to defeat the Trans-Pacific Partnership, for example. People didn't even know of it 2 years ago. Now we're on the verge of destroying it. And, we can actually turn these things around. We have the power if we get organized.
We've got Tea Party congressmen and progressive congressmen standing up and questioning our TPP for the first time.
That's right.
Peter, again, I'm going to go back to this criminalization of dissent because you've written so much about it.
That's a great issue.
And talk about what you think the kind of genesis of why it's so intense right now and where it's leading us.
Well, it's intense right now because it's actually exposing what's going on. And I think to a certain extent they don't mind if people are on the streets protesting because it's easy to make fun of them or say they're hippies or radicals or anarchists or whatever. But when people start coming forward with documents, you know, then the power structure has to start answering to that. And here's a great example. You know, we've been talking about Jeremy Hammond, but how many people know about Barrett Brown? And Barrett Brown is
point.
A guy who's currently in federal custody, looking at 105 years in prison, principally because he posted a link to the Stratfor leaks.
Right.
Like he wasn't engaged in the hack at all. He was a journalist. He had a journalistic project called Project PM, in which he and his friends crowdsourced the analysis of Stratfor and the H.B. Gary hacks. And he is in prison right now, and they charged him. The principal charges, there are like eight, the number of charges, but the sort of principal eight ones involve charges of credit card fraud. So they're saying that because there were credit card numbers in those 5 million Stratfor emails, that he, by posting a URL to that that data dump, that he was somehow engaged in credit card fraud. And clearly, in that case, he didn't do the hack, but what he was doing was analysis of the contents of the hack, and that's what's really got people freaked out, because he was taking that raw data and providing analysis of it and calling our attention to it.
And he's been silenced also. They are not letting the media, you know.
Oh, really... yeah. Well, that was the other thing. Then the prosecutor successfully asked for a gag order so that Barrett and his lawyers can't talk about it.
Another federal being brought by the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Another federal prosecution. Yeah, it's really obscene. And you know, I think that you know you're right about the criminalization of dissent at this critical time. Really, you know, it's interesting that you say they can, you know, just ignore the people in the street and the documents are the scary thing. What's interesting about the synergy between that, though, you know, the documents come out, you're going to get more people in the street. And there's a long history now of resistance movements, and we actually know what works. On our popularresistance.org site, under strategize, we have an article, the top article is about what works. And looking at 100 years of history, there's one researcher found that if 3.5% of the public gets active, 3.5, there has never been a time they've lost in the last 100 years. So these documents come out. We had about, in the Occupy, 0.1%. Look how it shook them and scared them. We had about 350,000 people active. If we get to 3.5, or you get 1% active, that's going to scare the power structure, especially because the documents come out and they make a bigger mass that aren't active but are aware.
So, and Peter, we'll wrap up for us before we have to go to Mel Goodman. Your closing thoughts.
Wrap up.
The conversation.
Your closing thoughts.
Oh, my closing thoughts, yeah. So I think one of the things about Jeremy Hammond and what makes him so important is he's a hybrid. He's an old school, on the ground, street activist, and he's also a hacker.
Yep.
And I think this is a new breed of character that we're starting to see now. We're seeing hackers that are more politically informed, politically active, and we see traditional activists embracing these tactics, and it's a powerful tool. It's much more powerful than a street march. I'm sorry, it just is. And what it's doing is it's helping to expose how rotten empire actually is, and that's really freaking people out to learn just how completely rotten it is.
Dr. Peter Ludlow is professor of philosophy at Northwestern University. He's written on hacktivism, the surveillance state, criminalization, dissent for many, many journals. We'll be linking to a lot of his articles and to his work on our website, as we'll be linking, of course, to all the work that Kevin Zeist does, co-host Clearing the Fog and co-director of it's OurEconomy.us, linking to his sites and work as well. Thank you both so much for being with
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having us on.
And good luck, Jeremy Hammond, and the struggle continues. We're going to take a very brief break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with Mel Goodman. Mel Goodman is a former CIA analyst. Who's written the book, National Insecurity, The Cost of American Militarism. Stay with us.
We'll be right back.